I'm going to start today with a little. I'm going to start today with a little personal story. I have a part of my yard, which like is very close. You know, the buildings are Avivim, the old ones where I live, not the new ones where I live. So they're like very close to each other. People are mamish on top of each other.
What, the yard?
Whatever, just like the buildings that were built very, very.
Anyways, our building.
No, but they were built in a way where it's like you feel like you're on top of each other. So the kids are, I have like a certain wall in my yard, like a certain, like, you know, where the fence is, that kids are, there's no privacy. So I built like half of a fence halfway, like a wooden fence halfway up. And then I have, you know, like that metal fencing material for a vine to grow on it, your passion fruit vine. So this past Sukkot, I don't know if you guys know passion fruit vines, they grow like crazy. They mommy grow like wildfire. If you're not on top of them, they like take over everything. So for a while, during the winter, I had not really done anything. And then when it came around, previous summer. Then when it came around Sukkot time, when I was like going to make my Sukkot, I realized there was a huge carpet of passion fruit vine on top of my pergola. I couldn't believe it. It was like, it covered half of my pergola, and I have a huge pergola. It's like 50 meters. So you're talking about like it was covering like 25 meters of the pergola. So whatever, so I like chopped the whole thing off, and I wound up basically having to chop the whole thing away.
You're allowed to do that? It's pretty.
Yeah, you're allowed to. It's a good shiloh, but you're allowed to. We might say you're allowed to. So it's like this. So I had to, like, the whole thing had to grow back. Like, even the screen part of it, the whole reason why I need it as a screening, like, it's a nice screen, instead of putting a yuta there or whatever. So the screen part was, like, destroyed. So over the winter, it doesn't grow so much because it's colder. So, you know, now since it's been getting, warmer, so, like, it's been growing back. And, like, over the past, like, 3 months, like, I've really been on top of it, you know, trimming it where it needs to be trimmed, like, training the branches just so that the way it works is that when you cut off the little growing tips, so then it shoots out branches further back. The kids are, so like, for the past 3 months, I've been like waiting and waiting for it to grow. Like, in the meantime, like, the neighbors can see to us and we can see to the neighbors, and like just it's getting to the point where like it's just about there, and I'm gonna trip. Like, I had a few lateral branches, like about 5 or 6, that like within a couple weeks would get all the way to the end, and then I would snip all of them and they would grow branches that would go vertical. And I wake up one morning this week and I took a look outside, and I almost fell over. It was destroyed. Someone had hacked away 3 months worth of work, right? Of waiting and work. I was about to go berserk. I'm obviously just about to lose it. And I knew who it was right away. I knew, because I have some, my neighbor has some very feisty children. So I hopped right away what had happened. Because I had saw them, they're like a little bit lower down than me, and they're like, they have like their pergola, the kids are, so I realized that one of their kids must have done it, right, that when they were doing it, so, they, you know, because there's some branches that go out to their side, you know, I can't reach all of them, because like,
and the ones trying to block from seeing, from,
No, the one under him, not the one that I'm trying to block from seeing him. Kids, it was a kid. So the, you know, his father told him to trim the ones that were growing on their pergola, but you know, he's a 10, 11 year old kid, whatever. So he hacked the whole thing to death, basically. So at first, I mean, I was like, I was ready to go on a rampage. I was ready to be some other guy that within Tyra, you know, whatever, kids are. But then Baruch Hashem, I got a hold of myself. I reminded myself of the time that we talk about that life is an obstacle course. Baruch Hashem. Just to give you an idea of what it felt like, imagine like if you have a painter who's been like working on a painting for months, and like some kid comes and just like with one swoop takes a knife and slashes the painting. So that's what it felt like. I mean, I was really seething. But coming back, there's a ha'ar over here, and the ha'ar is that we live in a world, just in general, where you can spend tons and tons and tons of time working on something, and it can be destroyed in a second. If you think about it, everything is like that, right? Think about the World Trade Center in New York, right? Think about how many years they've been working on rebuilding it now, and how much time did it take for those maniacs to destroy it? A few hours, right? A few hours. They just flew a plane into it, right? One big massive explosion, and within a few hours, years and years of work. And you're talking even materials that are like the strongest materials known to man. You know, like they're using steel and whatever they're using. The strongest materials known to man. Right? And and just in 1 second, you'll be knocked down. You know, like you could spend months building a whole building. You know, how long do you think they're building the cheder over here? How long do you think it would take a bulldozer to knock the whole thing down? That they're spending months building it? A few minutes. Maximum an hour.
One of the swimming balls.
Right. Exactly. You know, like we
live. To me, it comes with a Lego.
In Olam Hazeh, right? In Olam Hazeh, you could spend, you know, so much time to build, and it does not exist. There's no such thing as being able to build just like that. Destroying, you could use, especially nowadays, you could use dynamite to destroy a building within seconds, right? But there's no such thing to, you know, technology, as far as it goes, has never been able to do, you know, just like, okay, just like that, within a few seconds is a whole building constructed. Binyan requires an incredible amount of time, and destruction is just one moment. You can just destroy something that takes so long. So what are we supposed to get out of this? Like, why is it like that? What are we supposed to understand from this? So there's an interesting story. This one is already not a personal story. I don't remember who the names are, but like I've heard it a few times, so I'm pretty sure it's legit. That there was like one time, you know, like a secular, you know, guy who was like high up in the army or something like that, or used to be high up in the army, talking to a rabbi or someone like that, and you know, he was asking him why it is, you know, that you don't want to send your boys to the army, etc. And he said, listen, you know, 3 years in a secular environment, or let's put it this way, in a not exactly Torah-oriented environment, can wreak havoc on all the efforts that we put into the chinuch of our children. And he says, come on, right? You're trying to tell me that you spend whatever it is, 18 years, 20 years, raising your children in a certain way, and 3 years is going to destroy all of that? So he said to him, let me ask you a question. Are you aware that the army had a program that it would send what do they call it, Hashara Yehudit or something like that? Like, whatever, they wanted the soldiers, they had a program where they would send soldiers all over the place to get, you know, to know about all the different streams of Jews and all, and part of where they would send them is they would spend 3 days in the yeshiva. And he said, yeah, I'm aware of that program. And he said, are you aware that they closed it down? And he said, yeah, I'm also aware of that. He said, do you know why they closed it down? He said, no. And he said, well, ask around and you'll find out that the reason why it closed it down is because there were too many Bali Tshuva that were coming out of it. Now, you guys spend the same amount of time raising your kids to be secular, and in 3 days, right, your whole chinuch that you've given them goes down the tubes, right? And because of that, you're so scared of us that you stop sending your boys to visit our yeshivas. So you have a tain on me, you have a kash on me that 3 years can be makalkal the chinuch that we put into our kids. Okay, but that be that as it may, you know, the fact of the matter is that it's a shakatayna. You know, you spend 18 years, 20 years being mechanic someone in a certain way, and 3 years could just do away with it. So, I think that this is the point. Well, at least one point. You know, obviously Hashem made the world. You know, so there's probably a lot of depth to it. You know, a lot of angles. But I think at least one angle is that I think we have a tendency to think that if it's so easy for a person to fall, if it's so easy for a person, you know, a person reaches, gets a certain hesig ruchani, he achieves a certain spiritual level, a certain, you know, level of ruchnius, and we find that it's so easy to fall, it's so easy to drop, it's so easy to lose it, it gets so easily ruined. The natural tendency, therefore, is to think, so it must have really not been worth that much. You know, I spent a long time working on it and trying to get there, but if it just, you know, just like that, I mean, I'm not saying that it happens just like that, but if relatively speaking, just like that, I'm able to lose it, so then okay, it must be that it really wasn't worth much. It must be that there really wasn't anything so substantial or real to it. So no, if I care, that's why Hashem put us in a world in which the situation is that everything in the world is like that. Construction requires an incredible amount of time, an incredible amount of investment of energy, and the whole thing is to destroy it takes a second. Takes a few moments, relatively speaking, to show us that the fact that in Ruchnius as well, the fact that something in Ruchnius, you could work on it for so long to get to a certain point in your Ruchnius, and because it's able to just fall just like that, is to show you, no, don't think that it's that's a raya, that it really wasn't anything to begin with, that it really wasn't of any value to begin with, or it really wasn't a kinyan to begin with. No, it was. But kachi darkei shalayla, that. It's destruction is so easy. I think it actually goes further than, before I go weiter, there's a maisa in the article biography of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, that have you ever heard of a Rosh Yeshiva who retired from his position as Rosh Yeshiva? So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky retired. He was Rosh Yeshiva Torah V'Das after Shlomo Hyman was Nifter, and then after Rav Reuven was Nifter, so he became Rosh Yeshiva Torah V'Das, and at a certain point he retired. And after this point, you should know, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's heyday, like his years where he was the most prominent manig of Klal Yisrael, were his years following retiring as a Rosh Yeshiva Torah V'Das. So it wasn't because he wasn't B'chol Kai Chayzav, he was. He was mamish with his full kaiches. And he was mani Klal Yisrael for, I think it was like a good 15, 20 years afterward. You know, I might be off by about 5 or 10 years, but it was like a stark amount of time, so what was the pshat? Why did he retire? So, Rabbi Yonison Rosenblum, who wrote the, Jonathan Rosenblum, right, he has a thing in the Mishpacha magazine these days.
Yeah.
So he's the one who wrote this biography of Yaakov Kamenetsky. So he says, he claims over there inside the biography, you know, I think we can believe him, that one of Rav Yaakov's main reasons for retiring is because at that time, Torah V'Das, there was a lot of internal machlekes in the yeshiva about what he doesn't say. And Rav Yaakov was very worried that this machlekes was going to affect his midas, and he didn't want a lifetime of working on his midas to get ruined by some machlekes in the yeshiva. So he decided, I'm not interested, I don't want to be here. You know, listen, could it be that this is his parshanus of the Maisa? I don't know, but this is what he writes. This is what he writes in his biography. You know, and it's the same type of idea. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky spent a lifetime working on his midas, perfecting his midas, and he was chayish. So yeah, a few years of machlekes, or maybe even a few months of machlekes, could very adversely affect him, affect all that work, and take all that work, and perhaps really ruin a lot of it. But I think that it goes even further. So, and it's like this: how do you know when you're in a really rich person's house? What's the siman muvuk that you've entered a really rich guy's house? So the siman muvuk is that when you're with your kids, or your little brothers or sisters, you mamish make absolutely sure that they don't even so much as bat an eyelash. Right? Better yet, don't breathe. Right? Just stand in the corner, don't breathe. Don't move. Right? Don't look at anything. Don't touch this. Stop, don't climb over there. Don't go to that couch that's a silk, you know, that's Persian silk over there. Don't touch the curtain. When you're in a really rich guy's house, you mamish go out of your mind that your kids or your little siblings or whoever it is, and even yourself, gosh, you don't want to touch a thing, right? You know, you walk into just as a dogma, you walk into magical moments. You know that store over there with the tchotchkes, right? Of course, every store like that has a sign. You broke it, you paid for it, because the nicer the things are. So what do you see from that? That not only do we live in a matziv where binyan requires a lot of time and destruction could just be like that, but the easier it is to ruin something, that is a raya that it's more valuable. The more valuable and precious something is, like beautiful paintings, right? Paintings that go for thousands and thousands of dollars, right? Or all these tchotchkes, right? That these rich, you know, all of their silk fur, whatever couches they have and curtains and all that. And my grandmother was a little bit, you know, like she had a lot of these tchotchkes, right? She would get a little bit nervous when we would come to visit. Understandably so, you know, you never know, a kid's gonna break something, right? You bring a kid into a store where they're selling quality, you know, expensive things, you get really nervous. Because the slightest touch could make it fall and break. Because that is the teva of the world. The teva is that the more valuable, the more precious, the more treasured something is, the easier it is to break. The more fragile, the more delicate. So fakert. The fact that in Ruchnius, it's so easy to fall, and it's so easy for all the work to get messed up, that itself is the biggest raya that we're talking about the thing which is the most precious, the most valuable thing in the world, and that's why it's so delicate and so fragile and so easy to get ruined. There's a medrash that the Mesillas Yesharim brings. Actually, it's funny, I had it in my head that it was a Rashi at the beginning of Bereshis, but I all of a sudden it clicked that I had actually seen it with Silas Sharon. He brings a message from Kehelis Rabbah that the Ribbono Shel Olam took Adam, which is basically I think is bringing out this idea that I'm saying now, that Hashem took Adam and he brought him all around the Gan Eden and he said to him, look how beautiful, look at what a beautiful, wonderful, magnificent world I created. Ten Dait Chasholay to Kalkel the Takri Vaylami. Pay attention, you know, take heart. Take, you know, stay focused that you shouldn't mess up and destroy my world. Notice, I think it's this idea, meaning Akash Baruch Hu spent a lot of time Kibiyachol, right? Like Chazal tell us that one day or 1 hour of Akash Baruch Hu during Sheshes Mebreshes was like 1,000 days or 1,000 years, whatever it was, something like that, right? Rashi thinks that at the beginning. Or maybe it's a Chazal, something that's familiar with such a Chazal. Like one, I think it was like 1 day was 1,000 days or 1 hour was 1,000 days or something like that. The kids are, so Hashem spent a long time Kibiyachol, whatever that means for Hashem, right? Building this beautiful, magnificent, you know, complex world, and he says, you know, at the very least, be careful you don't mess it up. Right? Don't mess up my world that I created. Now, there's a little bit of an exception to the rule that I'm saying over here. I think. Okay, I didn't really like do a science experiment on this, but I think there's a little bit of an exception to this rule, and that is when it comes to jewelry. Right now, what do I mean by that? If you take jewelry, right, like let's say you have a very fine earrings or a very fine necklace or a pendant or something like that or whatever it is, a diamond ring, so sure, you could mess it up very easily, right? You know, a kid, like especially, you know, like these earrings that are like, the gold is like so flaky, it's like, you know, I feel like it's just going to fall off. So if a kid takes it and pounds on it, it's like, just smush it, right, and go ruin it in a second. Right? Or, you know, if someone, someone takes a pearl, you know, or diamond necklace or something like that, you know, and, you know, puts it through a grinder, so you ruined it in a second. But, what part of it was ruined? The part which is ruined is the tsura, meaning the specific form in which the raw material was in. But the matter itself, the chomer of the precious jewel, whether it's a pearl, whether it's right a gold, right, and it would seem, again, I wasn't planning such a thing, but it would seem that the more precious it is, the more indestructible it is. Like, what's the, at least I think, the strongest material known to man? It's diamond, right? Diamond, if I'm not mistaken, is the most valuable and precious stone that there is. I think it's even costing more than gold, right?
Diamond's valuable.
I think so. Yeah. And diamonds, so what do they use to cut through concrete and steel? Diamond cutters. Right? Diamonds are the most indestructible material, apparently, as far as I'm aware, known to man. So, what's the pshat? So, how does this fit into what we're trying to say? So, I think the idea is like this. That mitzad echad, to create something, and to fix something, to be metaking it, requires a tremendous amount of time and energy and investment, and to destroy it is just like that, right? And fakertgar, the easier it is to mess up, shows that it's more valuable and more expensive and more precious and more treasured. However, when you're dealing with that which is the most valuable, then the only thing that can truly be destroyed, that can be truly ruined, right, is the specific form in which it's in. But the chomer, the material itself, that can't be destroyed. You could take the gold, right? You could smash the gold earring, right? But it's extremely difficult, you know, to actually destroy the gold itself. So what do I want to take out of there? What I want to take out of there is that when a person works on himself, right, using like that's the mashal and the nimshal is the person with his ruchnis. When a person works really hard on himself and he puts an investment in, right? So let's say something happens, right, or you know he has bad experiences, whatever it is, and falls, right, and it gets messed up, it gets ruined. So what got ruined? Not the etzem pnimius of who and what he is. That didn't get ruined because that can't get ruined because the neshama shenasata b'tahirahi, the neshama, which is of course the whole source and the root of the koyach of all of our ability to attain everything in ruchnis and to be metakin ourselves and to grow as people, that itself is indestructible because that itself is the most precious, the most valuable thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the entirety of creation. Just what? Just the being mighty mea koyach al poyal, the bringing out of the koyach of the neshama, the specific tsura, so that it's able to shine forth, like when you take a diamond. Someone once said a gevalde gezog, it was a guy who was a bal tshuva from Mishnah Torah that I knew. He said to me, every single Jew is a precious diamond. The only difference between them is to how much polishing they still need. Right, you take a diamond out of the ground, so it can be filthy and disgusting and filled with dirt, right? So like, you know, a guy who doesn't appreciate these stones might be like, ah, put that put that rock away, right? It's got earthworms crawling on it. Who knows what else is all over it, right? But a guy who knows how to value diamonds is stupid, right? He doesn't realize that there's $1 million underneath the dirt over here, right? Fine, so we'll have to get our hands a little bit dirty to work it out, but we'll work it out. It's worth it, right? It's a worthwhile investment. So when the value is inherent, it's be'etzim, that it's not just b'mikre because, you know, you happen to put steel together with wood together with this. When the value is mamish inherent, right, which the muscle for that is precious stones and precious materials that exist in the world, right, as opposed to like our money nowadays, is has no inherent value. The whole value that we have, it's a little bit scary if you think about it, is kol kulei mitzad tzura. People, for whatever reason, decided that we're all going to agree that if you take paper and put this color and this image and this number on it, so then it's worth kach lekach. Even though the paper that it's printed on is be'etzim and the dye that was used is be'etzim worthless. Yeah, that's worth a few pennies. It used to be that they used to use real copper or real silver or real gold to make coins, right? And that was money. So the money had an inherent value, and then when you put a tzura on it, it brings out the inherent value even more. But nowadays, it's totally mitzad tzura. You know, so you take a dollar bill, you rip it to pieces, it's mamish worthless. If you take a gold coin, which Leib Mazagin, because it has the coinage, is worth $100, and you rip it to pieces, it's still worth at least, Leib Mazagin, $50, $60, $70. Maybe less. It's still worth a lot, right? But it doesn't become worthless because you tore it up, because you took off the tzura. So you see that those things
definitely should be worth $100.
No, it's not. It's not. Back in the day when they used to use it, that's
people couldn't coin.
What?
You couldn't coin your own?
Apparently not, because you see, even in America, it wasn't so long ago that Musig of a silver dollar. Money used to be connected. How did money start, at least in America?
No, hold on a second. 1,000 years ago.
No.
The person could take.
No, it wasn't worth the same thing. Wasn't worth the same thing. You see from the Gemara that they used to, at least I don't know what it says in the secular history books. I would imagine it says the Lahavdilah. I would imagine it says a similar thing. Because Chazal is just describing the Metzias. It says that all of a sudden you could have a new king and the king would tassel the old coinage. You saw that it wasn't just anybody was able to make the coinage. The coinage, the tzura to it, but see, you know, Azov coins for a minute. Azov coins. When you take the gold and you make it into a necklace, when you take the gold and you make it into an earring, so you're masking that is maisif, or you sculpt it into it, so that's maisif of value. So let's leave coins out. But the point is that there's a value which is inherent and be'etzim in the chomer itself, in the material itself, and there's a value which is mitzvah the tzura. So it's like this, to bring it to a little bit to the parashis that we're handling over here. We have last week's parsha towards the end, right? Bilam says one of his nevuahs, which I think we mentioned last time, right? It's probably one of the most famous lines in the entire Torah. Matayvar alecha Yaakov mishkanesecha Yisrael. So Rashi says, Vayisa Bilam on the pasuk in Chav Dalet Beis. Vayisa Bilam is ein. Vayaris Yisrael shechem mishvat vatiel of ruach elokim. So Rashi says, what happened over here? Bilam really Vayisa ein of is he wanted to put an ayin hara. But what happened? He saw that they were sheikhin l'shvatav. Ra'a kol shevet b'shevet sheikhin l'atzmi. He saw every shevet was, you know, grouped by according to its shevet. Ve'en and u'rovin, and they're not all, you know, mixed up and mishterayim. Ra'a she'en p'shein l'chubarim zeken egzen. He saw that the windows, the openings of the tents were not opposite one another. Shelo yatzitz l'teichoy l'chaveru for privacy, so that people shouldn't be able to look in. Right, coming back to the beginning of the drasha about my screen. Right, so people shouldn't be able to look in. Vatiel of ruach elokim ala b'libo shelo yikalim. It occurred to Bilam. He felt like, okay, I don't want to curse them. Even Bilam Harasha was moved to feel like he shouldn't curse the Jewish people. For what? Because he saw that their tznius was so beautiful. It was so mushlam. It was so solid. That he couldn't help to feel like, you know, how can I curse such people? And yet what happens? A few psukim later, Rashi brings from the Chazal that he was giving him an Eitzah for B'nai Smayach to be Mashal Kal Yisrael. A few psukim later, and they were Mizana with them. And Rashi describes what was going on. They sent out their girls, and they attracted the men, And when they were overcome with their taiva, and they said, Ishamdi, right? You know, let me do it already. She would say, no, 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 first, she would take out her geshka first, bow down, and then bow down, and then they would do it. They fell from the heights, from so high, sneers. from the madriga of such a tzniut that even Bill and Rosh couldn't help but be inspired to feel like, how can I curse such people? And look how they fell, mamish, boom, to the, like, to the bottom. So I think before I get to the Hein Advarim, and then you see that what happens is by Yicharat Hashem Bistro, Charoinaf, wrath, right? And a plague starts, and then of course Pinchas does what he does, and then at the beginning of this week's parsha, which is Pinchas, so Hashem says, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, Akai Nation, Chamos, Malvin, Yisrael, Bekanes, Kinasi, Bisaychom, Bibli, Chilises, Ben Yisrael, Bekinasi, Lachain, Varloi, Hinan, Yinesim, Bisishom. I have such a curse that Taif says the Ribbon to Pinchas because he saved off my Charoin off from Klal Yisrael. He saved off my anger, so to speak, because he was Mekane the Kinnah that I should have been Mekane. He was Mekane down here below, and therefore made it that I didn't have to do it Ben Hashemayim. And he saved Klal Yisrael. But like Chilises Ben Yisrael, Bekinasi. I don't understand. The Ribbon Shel Olam is overcome, Kiviyachol, right? Whatever, you know, so to speak, with wrath against Klal Yisrael because of what they're doing. Doing such a horrible Aveira. Right? And especially, you know, it's spitzed off with Zimri, you know, what he did. Right? It's a horrible Aveira. And he's Molly Charoin Af. You know, and Pinchas comes along and stops it. So the Rebbe says, "Ah, I'm such a curse to Tov." What do you mean, such a curse to Tov? Weren't you angry at us? Weren't you ninos with us? Weren't you disgusted with us? Well, and also, and then he says, "Vaydaber so much lemer tzareres amidyanim." You know, you have to siege the Midyanim. And Rashi says tzareres is not just a one-time thing, even though they did go do it now. But tzareres, Rashi says, is lashon hoyde all the time. K'mayzachar shamar lashon hoyde aleichem le'ayevotam. You have to all the time be against the Midyanim. It's like mamish lo'olam lo'ayme amamim. You have this vendetta against the, you know, we say there's an isser of netira. This you have to be neiter. This is there's a chiyuv of netira, right? Not like Sitar, Titar, you have to be Ma'ayevotam all the time. Because why keep serving him Machem Nichlaim, Shariku Lechem Advar Parval, Advar Kazim Vasim Midian? Because they were the ones who caused you to be Nichshol. So what's going on over here? Right, you're so angry at the Midianim? Be angry at Klal Yisrael. The Midianim, the Goyim, they're trying to save themselves. So what's the Pshat? So I think the Pshat is Hein Advarim. The Fakir Gur. The fact that Klal Yisrael could so easily fall. And fall, not just fall, but fall so hard. So awful. That is a raya, and it's because they were on such a high madrego. Because the more precious something is, and then the more delicate and fragile it is, and the easier it is to break it. That is kachi darka shalom. That's the way the world works. Right? It's not a schizophrenia on the part of Klal Yisrael. It's not like, oh my god. Like, at first glance, you look at it, you're like, what in the world? Like, from the spitz of tznius to the spitz of, like, not even pritzus. You're talking about znus with avayda, mished with avayda zara. Like, I mean, you're talking about things that, like, we can't even imagine such things. Like, it sounds like Klal Yisrael is schizophrenic. Like, what in the world is going on here? You know what schizophrenia means? Split personality. Like, well, like, what in the world? The truth is that it doesn't mean, that's how people use it, right? Split personality and schizophrenia is actually two different disorders, but whatever. Wait, is it split personality over here? No. That's Hagufa. Because they were on such an incredibly refined level of tznius, that is why they were so delicate and fragile and could be ruined so easily, and could be destroyed so easily. And that's why, coming back to what I said before about the mashal of the precious stones and the precious material, that's why even though the Ribbono Shel Olam was Vayichar Af Hashem, but what does it mean Vayichar Af Hashem? So mashal, again, sorry with all my mashalim today, but mashal l'matan v'taymer. Imagine the guy is a kid, and the kid's friend exposes him to drugs, and he gets him to drugs. So the father might take, you know, very harsh measures to get the kid back in line, right? Let's assume that the father is totally level-headed inside, right? It's not like he's having an emotional outburst, right? He really is, it's cold, coolly, it's objective, he really is just, he needs to get this kid back in line, you know? So sometimes, he might have to take extreme and harsh measures. Because, you know, when someone gets messed up in something really bad, sometimes, you know, he needs a really big clump to get him back in. Okay, nowadays, the way we deal with it, whatever it is, I'm not talking lamaisa, right? I'm just giving you a muscle. So he might take really harsh measures. But if someone would come along and do something, you know, to that would all of a sudden zets the kid back in line. Whoa, what was I doing, right? You get rid of the drugs and come back in line. Of course the father would be overcome with such a hakaras atayim. Why? Because why is the father doing what he's doing, the charoin af that he's doing? He's not doing it because he's mad bad to him at the kid. It's because he realizes that his kid is so precious, his kid is so valuable, and it's a chaval beyond chaval, it's the worst thing imaginable that someone, his child, that is so precious and such a treasure and so valuable that should get messed up by drugs, that he's trying to get the precious chaymer to come back out, to bring out those kaychas, to get the tzura back to this precious chaymer. And who is he really going to be angry at? So of course he's really going to be angry at the other friend that exposed him to the drugs and pulled him into this muck. That's who he's going to be angry at. So that's what was going on over here. The Klausel, because of their incredibly refined level, that it was so delicate and so fragile that it's so easy to get messed up, to get ruined. And the Ribbono Shel Olam's charoyin af was just to be able, it's like going back to the jewelry marshal. You know, so if let's say you have a piece of fine, very fine piece of jewelry with gold and diamonds and whatever it is, right, and it gets, you know, and it gets, you know, thrown into a grinder or something like that. You know, so you might have to wind up applying fire to melt the gold down again, to melt it down, so that you can reform it. And you might have to apply incredible friction on the diamonds to polish them again, right? You're talking about things that you understand what I'm getting with the nimshel, right? You might have to apply, and then you take the gold when it's melted down and bang it, right? And twist it, right? And you know, and turn it and do a lot of like hitting and twisting and things that are not, you know, if this gold and diamonds could feel, it would hurt a lot. But what is that all for? It's to get it back to its tzura. It's to get it back because this is incredibly precious material that doesn't need to be in this tzura, so that their value could truly come out and shine through. So that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam was doing with Klal Yisrael and the Vayicharav. So when Pinchas, when it was an Isarusa from down here, when it was a Hisairus from Olam Hazeh, which works even more effectively than when it's from Shemaim, so then it was able to happen quicker with less suffering for Klal Yisrael. So of course, Kadosh Baruch Hu has the greatest Akaras HaTayim, because you brought them back. And that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu was so angry with the Midianim, Be'etzim, because they were the ones who dragged this precious thing into the mud. So, Levi, it's like this. You know, just coming back to the original thing, when we have, you know, you have people, it's like you have these really rich people, so they have a $50,000 diamond ring. So she has this huge, massive safe in her house where she keeps her diamond ring and all the real stuff. And then she wears the fake stuff, but she has to have the real thing. She just wears the fake stuff, which is like representing. It's like, you know, like my representative, you know, like the Rosh Hashiva doesn't go himself. He says it's Gabbai, the Rebbe says it's Gabbayim. Right? You know, my representative, the real thing is there. So here's my representative of the real thing. You know, do you think they feel like, you know, listen, if I have to spend so much money and so much time and investment to protect these things because they're so easily ruined, they're so easily stolen, they're so easily, you know, just everything can fall apart. So what's it worth anyway? No, of course nobody says what's it worth anyway. They say, but care, the other apple. It's because it's so valuable that I have to invest so much to protect it. Because the more valuable something is, the more you have to protect it. So it's like this. What do we get out of this? So first and foremost, I think what we get out of this is that it's important to realize that we all have nefilis in life. We all fall at some point, right? Some people started coming, right? We all fall. We all, and sometimes we fall hard, real hard, right? Sometimes we you know, like I was speaking to a relative of mine who told me that for years growing up he had a temper issue, like serious temper issues. And for years, you know, through his older adolescence as a young adult, he worked on it for years and years and years, and like he really made incredible strides. And then like there was a certain thing that happened in his family that he told me, he confided to me, he said it set him back incredibly. Like whatever, there was a certain upheaval, right, a certain not gishmak family thing happened where he said, and this is already, he's about the same age as I am, and he told me it set him back incredibly. It set him so far back. So we all have these nefilas sometimes, right? Sometimes we have small nefilas, right? And sometimes we have really big ones. So the first thing is to catch ourselves, because there's that Yetzirah tendency is to give us yush and to make us feel like, oh, listen, you know, if it's so easy just like that for it to get ruined and for it to get messed up, you know, so what was it? What's the point anyway? You know, what's it worth anyway? No, fakert. Fakert gar. It's the exact opposite. It's the hepech hagomor. The fact that it so easily gets ruined is the biggest raya how precious and valuable it is. Right, and that's the first. I think that's the first and foremost what we need to take out of this. That we have to realize that when these things happen, right, that it's a raya to how precious and valuable what we had is, and also at the same time to realize that even if the tzura can get messed up, but the etzem chaymer, the etzem who we are with our neshamas, which is the makor of who we are, that never gets ruined. Just sometimes we have to knock ourselves back and do whatever we need to do to get the tzura back, to bring our kaychas, to get it back there, right? And of course, you know, also at the same time is to realize what the value that we have, and to try to take the measures, you know, that we take to protect it. You know, going back to the mashal of someone who has, you know, these precious tchotchkes and jewelry, whatever it is, so they have a safe, or they have all these different things that they have to protect it. You know, so we also have to try, to whatever extent we're able, to protect the value that we have in the ruchniyistika hesedim that we get. You know, so like just l'dugma, you know, you spend a whole zman, you know, learning shtark, right? You know, you have vadim and whatever, and you feel like you grow. You know, you grow over the course of Hizman, right? So then a bit of Hizman comes. So part of our job is to try to realize that, listen, you have a big hesed, right? We have to try, you know, try as much as possible to protect it. To protect it, you know, whether that means not going to places that are, you know, that are not the best places to go to, right? Or not hanging out with people that are not the best people to hang out with. Or whatever, you know, all the different things, you know, that, you know, it's the summertime, Shemir Sinayim becomes much, much more difficult, especially when, sometimes I have to go to Petach Tikva to, for a medical checkup, the hospital over there. I mean, you know, as bad as things get in Beit Shemesh during the summer, you know, it's, you know, obviously the higher percentage of Chiloyim, the worse it is, right? Unfortunately, you know, Chumon Atzlan, Hashem should help all of us in the Tshuva. You know, but, you know, to whatever extent we're able to, you know, to protect ourselves. But I really think that the ikar nekuda that we need to remember is that, yeah, we have to try to whatever extent to protect ourselves, but, you know, listen, sometimes we fall. That's part of life. Part of life is that sometimes we fall, and sometimes we fall hard, rahmatullah islam. You know, and we hope that we're able to bounce back as quickly as possible. But to realize that that's not a raya, that there was no value, fakir, it's the biggest raya that it had the biggest value to begin with. Okay.